So the Texas Rangers are 16-8 at Globe Life Field this year. The Texas baseball team, not so much.
Are Locked On Longhorns, your daily podcast on the Texas Longhorns. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Longhorns, the show. Jonathan Davis, your host. Today's episode of Locked On Longhorns is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. On today's episode of Locked On Longhorns, we are talking about the Texas baseball team. They went into the Big 12 tournament as the number one seed in a double elimination tournament. They used up both of their elimination games already. They are headed home. They were talking about the Texas football team where Bet Online released about 7 or 8 lines for the season this year. I tell you if I'm taking or fading the Longhorns in those matchups. Then we talk about the Texas basketball team where we continue to hear Texas and the 40 acres as a likely landing spot for Caleb Love, one of the most dynamic players in the transfer portal. We discuss all of that and more on today's episode of Locked On Longhorns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So like I said, I'm switching up the order a little bit. I'm not sure how this will, you know, doing the views or whatever, how this will affect the algorithm, but we are switching up the episode a little bit today. We're talking about the Texas baseball team first. They are participating in postseason play. The football team is not, so they can wait until the second segment. And when you look at the season this year, was a bit of a roller coaster, but it ended on a high note, right? I guess it ended at the peak. You won your last 5 games. I think you won those games by a combined run differential of plus 59, so that's great. And you ended the season with a sweep of West Virginia to secure 33% of the Big 12 championship, right, with West Virginia and Oklahoma State. But you came into the Big 12 tournament as the number one seed, and Texas fans felt like we had a good chance of hosting a regional. It probably would take a somewhat decent showing in the Big 12 tournaments to secure that, but we had a really good chance. And that was not the case, right? They went into this tournament at Globe Life Field and lost both games as the number one seed, and they're already headed home. Like I said, they had 2 elimination games to work with. They used both of them in their first 2 games. And Texas this season, period, is 0-5 in Globe Life Field. And I have 2 reactions to that. My first reaction to that is surprising because, as I mentioned in the cold open, the Texas Rangers, the first place Texas Rangers, who are 3 games ahead of the Houston Astros in the AL West, have no problem playing at home, winning 2 out of every 3 games they play there in Globe Life Field. I also feel a little bit better, of course, not about the result. I wanted to see, you know, the Texas baseball team win the Big 12 tournament. I want them to win every game. But last year, I went to a Texas-Oklahoma game in Globe Life Field, and Texas lost. And then I think they won the game the day after I went. Like, I went one day, they lost, and then the next day they won. I felt like I was a bad luck charm for the Texas baseball team, right? But now I see they just don't like playing in Globe Life Field because they're 0-5 this year, and their overall record in that building is not great. You know, maybe they just prefer the dish. I don't know what it is. The Rangers have no problem playing there. Anyways, when you look at what happened the last 2 days, the Texas baseball team lost on Wednesday to Kansas 6-3, and they lost on Thursday to Kansas State 6-0. The last 2 days, the state of Kansas was better than the University of Texas at baseball. And this is, to me, right, the reason why baseball is the superior sport to football and basketball. To me, right? Because in football, 9 times out of 10, it comes down to who has the best quarterback on the field, right? The best quarterback on the field is going to win the game 90-95% of the time. In basketball, it comes down to who has the most stars on the court, right? 95% of the time, the team who has the most stars on the court is going to win the game. But baseball is all about parity, and we saw that the last 2 days. It comes down to who pitches the best on that day, who hits the best on that day, and who plays the best defense on that day. And so you saw a team that had the Big 12 pitcher of the year, a member of the Big 12 all-freshman team, and I think 6-7, maybe even 7-8 first-team all-Big 12 players lost in 2 games to 2 inferior teams, at least in terms of seeding, to Kansas and Kansas State. So on Wednesday, Lucas Gordon was good, but not the Lucas Gordon we're used to seeing. But he still left the game only giving up 2 runs. The problem was because the offense didn't show up, he got outpitched by Colin Baumgartner from Kansas. On Thursday, LBJ gave you a quality start. 6 innings pitched, 2 earned runs. It's not the LBJ we're used to seeing, right? We've seen games where he's had 12-plus Ks. He only had 2 Ks, and I think he had 7 or 8 hits allowed, right? So not the LBJ we're used to seeing. but he still gave you a quality start. If you're two aces, your two co-aces, whatever you want to call them, right? Your two first team all Big 12 pitchers and the pitcher of the year only give up two runs. You have to find a way to win those games. And unfortunately, Texas did not. And that is why they are at home. One of the biggest reasons for that is the bullpen. And normally on my show, the order goes football, basketball, baseball, right? That's usually the order I like talking about the sports. And so my baseball segment gets buried at the end of the show. And a lot of times, a lot of people don't hear it, right? But one thing I've said for the last month is the bullpen giving up these runs and, you know, at the end of the game has been a problem. And I don't think we looked at it as enough of a problem because they weren't blowing leads. They were giving up runs, but the Texas baseball team was scoring 10, 11 runs a game at times. And so even though the bullpen would give up 2 to 3 runs in the eighth or ninth inning, it never affected you, right, until this tournament. And I remember it started with the Baylor series where I think they gave up 11 ninth inning runs in just the first two games, which is absolutely ridiculous, and still found a way to win one of those games, right? That has been really the story of the Texas baseball team for the last month. But like I said, the offense has been able to pick them up so much that even though they would give up a run here and there in the eighth or ninth inning, which is a cardinal sin, the Texas baseball team would still find a way to win. But I said, when you get to postseason play and the at-bats are more intense, every pitch is more intense, you cannot send your bullpen out there, have them give up runs, and expect to win a national championship, right? Or expect to get to Omaha, expect to get to a super regional, right? And that was the case, losing these two games in the Big 12 tournament. And it's probably the biggest reason why you're not hosting a regional next week. When you look at it, in two games, the bullpen gave up 8 runs and 14 base runners in just 7 innings, including 6 walks. They're not even making other teams earn it. And on Wednesday, you're tied 2-2 in a very intense game where it could have gone either way. You give up a grand slam, which puts that game out of reach, even though you end up scoring another run. And then on Thursday, LBJ leaves the game down 2-0, but you still have a chance with the offensive firepower you have. That lead gets extended to 6, and it didn't matter because Texas didn't score at all. But the likelihood of you getting to 6 or 7 runs was not great based on what we saw the last 2 days from the offense. And not only that, to add insult to injury or injury to insult, however you want to say it, one of your best bullpen arms, David Shaw, got injured, and it's likely we won't see him for the rest of the season. So not great things from the bullpen the last month, and it really bit you in the ass the last 2 days against Kansas and Kansas State. Now, the offense definitely deserves some culpability, and you know, it's baseball. There's going to be times where you just can't hit. They were great for the last month, month and a half of the season, really 2 months. But, you know, the last 2 days, like I said, the pitchers on the other team were just better than our hitters. And our offense that we had seen put up, like I said, 8, 9, 10 runs a game on the regular struck out 21 times. You only get 54 outs to work with. You don't want to use 21 of them on strikeouts. That's not great. They went 2 for 14 with runners in scoring position, the biggest reason they only scored 3 runs in 2 games in Arlington. And they went 5 for 23 with 2 outs. That's not going to cut it either. So, you know, like I said, baseball is all about parity. And even though Texas was the number one seed, even though Texas probably by far had more talent than Kansas and Kansas State, Kansas was better on Wednesday. Kansas State was better on Thursday. And that's why Texas is headed home and has to wait to see where they'll be playing next week in the regional. And I got these numbers from Nash. And this is, I guess, the glimmer of hope, right? When you look at all of the teams that have made it to the College World Series since 1999, 48 of them did not host a regional. That's 26%. So that tells me that Texas has a 1 in 4 chance of still making it to Omaha, even though they will not be hosting a regional next week. And 6 of those 48 teams have won it all, including that Ole Miss team last year. So it does not look great for Texas after, you know, that dismal showing in the Big 12 tournament and now having to go on the road to host a regional. But, you know, like I said, it doesn't matter where you play baseball. It's about who hits better on that day, who plays defense better on that day, and who pitches better on that day. And we know the Texas baseball team has more than enough talent to do that for the remainder of the season and still get to Omaha and make noise in postseason play. A quick word from Bird Dogs, and we're going to talk about the Texas football team and some interesting betting lines from betonline.net. when you're talking about Bird Dogs, they're some of my favorite shorts. And the reason they're some of my favorite shorts, because I love the fit, the comfort, and the versatility they provide me. When I talk about the fit, I look better and I feel great wearing Bird Dogs. The comfort, their stretchy fabric makes my legs look great, and they're comfier than my other shorts and pants. Definitely my go-to when I want to put on shorts. And I talk about the versatility. I can wear them anywhere, to the gym, around the house, to my girl's house, to my homeboy's house, wherever I need to go, I can wear the Bird Dogs and they look great on me. Go to birddogs.com/lockedoncollege. And when you enter promo code LockedOnCollege, they'll throw in a free custom Bird Dogs Yeti style tumbler with every order. Go to birddogs.com right now /lockedoncollege and get your Bird Dogs so you can style and profile like the host of Locked On Longhorns, Jonathan Davis. All right, now we're talking about the Texas football team, and they are poised for a big season this year, and Bet Online seems to think so. They have released some lines for the Texas football team, and it would seem as though Texas is going to be favored in 11 of 12 games this year. If they make it to the Big 12 championship game, they're going to be favored in that game as well. The only game they will be underdogs in is the game on the road at Alabama in Tuscaloosa, which makes all the sense in the world. So, you know, Bet Online put out, let's see, 7 lines. And, you know, I want to talk about each line, whether I would take that line or fade that line, and, you know, how I feel about the Longhorns in that matchup. So we're going to start with Texas being 35-point favorites against Rice. Now, as somebody that, you know, gambles somewhat frequently, I always see these huge lines, especially in college sports, and my first instinct is to fade it, right? Like 35 points, that's a lot. Even if Texas does win, even if Texas does cover, right, I don't want to put my money on it. I don't want to wait for Texas to get up 35 points to finally feel comfortable, right? That's a lot of points. And I remember last year against ULM, the line was similar. It might not have been 35, maybe it was 32. But I was like, I would probably fade that, right? You know, Quinn Ewers, his first start, you know, a lot of new pieces on this football team. I'm not sure how they'll come out and play. And they came out and covered against ULM. I'm not going to make that same mistake this year. 35 points is a lot, right? And Rice has upgraded at the quarterback position, bringing in JT Daniels. The problem is that's probably the only unit where they can even compete with Texas in terms of talent. And Quinn Ewers is definitely better than JT Daniels, right? Every other unit, Texas clears by a wide margin. And I would expect if the two quarterbacks playing in this game are Malik Murphy and Quinn Ewers, combined with all of the talent we have going against what Rice has, no disrespect, but Rice cannot compare to the University of Texas. I think Texas will, in fact, cover that 35 points against Rice. Like I said, it sounds like a lot. And I know sometimes when you gamble, you're like, 35 points. I don't know. It's Texas. I'll fade it. I'm here to tell you right now, Texas will beat Rice by 35 points come the first game of the season. Texas plus 6.5 against Alabama. So obviously, you know, Alabama, based on what they've done, you know, the last 15 to 16 years, even based on what they did last year, right? I mean, you know, you can say what you want about the game. You know, some questionable calls in that game. Quinn Ewers gets hurt. I definitely think Texas had a path to winning that game. But, you know, we don't live in a hypothetical society. We live in a real society. And Alabama did win. They did win 10 or 11 games last year. I can't remember how many it was. And Texas won 8 games, right? I think Texas comes into this game with arguably a more talented roster than Alabama. They certainly come into the game with a lot of advantages in terms of returning players and returning coaches compared to what Alabama's replacing. Just off the top of my head, you're replacing your defensive leader, you're replacing your quarterback and your leader, you're replacing your offensive coordinator, you're replacing your defensive coordinator, you're replacing your starting running back, your starting left tackle, and then multiple pieces on the defense, right? That's a lot to replace, and Texas is not having to replace all of that. But on the road against the GOAT, Nick Saban, in Alabama, tough SEC environment, it makes sense why Alabama is favored. And they're favored by about a touchdown, 6.5 points, which makes sense to me as well. But I'm taking Texas plus the points in this matchup because I think Texas wins this game outright. Yes, I think Texas goes into Alabama in week 2. I think Quinn Ewers stays healthy the whole game, knocks on wood, and I think Texas beats Alabama outright. Now, I'm not telling you to take Texas outright. If they're going to give you 7 points, by all means, take those, right? That's the safer bet. I just think Texas is going to win outright. So plus 6.5 is free money to me, right? Because I definitely think if they don't win, they'll be within a touchdown. But like I said, I think Texas just has a lot of advantages going into this game next year. I think Alabama, we're starting to see chinks in the armor. They're still going to win 10 games. They're still going to be one of the best teams in the country. But we're used to seeing an Alabama team that's unbeatable, right? Like that 2020 Alabama team. That team we saw last year, that Alabama team, was super vulnerable. I think they'll be even more vulnerable next year when you lose a player like Bryce Young. I think Texas goes in there and wins that game outright. But if you can take the points, don't be silly. Take the points. The next line is Texas favorite by 8 against Baylor. Now, I'm probably fading this one altogether. If this was 7 and I had the push potential of Texas winning by a touchdown and not losing my money, I would probably take it. The thing is, I think Baylor has lost a lot of talent since they won the Big 12 championship game. And I think Texas is 8 points better than Baylor in terms of just pure talent on the field. But we know that Dave Aranda is a really good coach. And there is a chance in this game that Dave Aranda can out-coach Steve Sarkisian. And this defense can still give Quinn Ewers, albeit in his second season, some trouble, right? We also don't know how good the running game will be. And that will work in Baylor's favor if we cannot get the running game going. Because remember, last year, we couldn't get it going until the end of the game where they leaned on Bijan and Roshan, right? You don't have Bijan and Roshan anymore. So I'm not sure how effectively you'll be able to run the ball against Baylor. Not sure what looks Dave Aranda will give Quinn Ewers. And like I said, I could see a path to Dave Aranda out-coaching Steve Sarkisian in this game. So I think Texas should beat Baylor by more than 8 points. I would love this line at 7 because it would give me push potential in terms of Texas winning by 7 and me not losing my money. 8 is a little much to ask for. I'm fading this all together, but I do think Texas probably in the end beats Baylor by 8 or more. But you know, when you're putting your money down, you got to be more than sure. And I'm not more than sure about that one. Texas favored by 17 against Kansas. I'm hammering this, right? And I know what you're thinking. Kansas is on the rise. They got Jalen Daniels. He's really good. They started off 5-0 last year. Look, man, you know, maybe it's because Kansas beat us twice and, you know, they shouldn't have. And I'll just never forgive Kansas for that. Maybe I just hate Kansas. You know, I don't know. Jalen Daniels came back last year and Bijan Robinson broke records, right? And obviously Bijan Robinson is in the NFL right now. But to me, I just don't see a scenario where you've lost to Kansas twice and this team goes out there and loses to Kansas again, right? And we saw the whooping they put on them last year on the road. Now you're going to be at home. The last time you played Kansas at home was that embarrassing 57-56 loss in the first year under Steve Sarkisian. So not only were you motivated to get your lick back against Kansas last year, now you're motivated to get your lick back because last time you played them at home, they beat you. Texas is going to absolutely smash Kansas this year. Kansas is not on the rise. Their run was that 5 games they won in a row last year. They are done. Texas beats them by 17 plus. Mark my words. Hammer that in right now. Texas favored by 6 against Oklahoma. I'm fading this one, right? I think Texas is 6 points better than Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma is still in the midst of a rebuild. But when you look at the history of the Red River rivalry, there's so many 3-point games in this history, right? It never matters who the better team is because these teams hate each other. These players hate each other, and they show up and play with that type of intensity. And even if Texas is the better team than Oklahoma, there is more than enough scenarios where Oklahoma can get within 6 by the end of the game. This should be a close game for the entirety of the game, right? We know that 49-0 was an anomaly as much as we like to brag about it, you know, because we were on the winning side of it. We know that that's not going to happen this year. Oklahoma will be a lot better. I'm assuming Dylan Gabriel will play in this game. And if he's not, then Jackson Arnold will be playing in this game. And that's a lot better than the option they had last year with Davis Bevel. So Texas minus 6 against Oklahoma. Texas probably is 6 points better than Oklahoma. Texas probably will win this game by 6 points, but I don't know that for sure. And I don't want to lose my money. Nobody wants to lose money. So that's why I'm probably fading that game. Texas minus 9.5 against Kansas State. I would either fade that or take Kansas State. And I know Kansas State has not beaten Texas since 2017, but that's one of the most respectable programs in the country, certainly in the Big 12. And I think they return their entire offensive line next year, including the best guard in the country. They return Will Howard, who was really good last year, took over for Adrian Martinez. And they replaced Deuce Vaughn with a running back from Florida State who's going to be really good. They have some pieces on the outside, and they lost their 3 best players on defense, but Kansas State has always been competent on defense. I would expect that to continue. Now, the game is in Austin. Maybe the reason that Kansas State is underdogs by almost 10 points, but I just have a lot of respect for that program, and I think even though Texas beats Kansas State and continues to, you know, keep that winning streak going since 2017, I'm not 100% sure that they can beat them by 10 points. That's just a program I have a lot of respect for, and I think that's going to be a really good game in Austin. So I think Texas beats Kansas State by 10 points. I'm not sure about that. I wouldn't put my money on that. And then Texas minus 5 against TCU. So this is interesting. because TCU did just go to the national championship game, and they should be the favorites in the Big 12, theoretically, coming into next season. But we know that they lost so many pieces, and they lost the core of that team. Now, I think they still have a really good quarterback in Chandler Morris. I think they did a really good job of, you know, bringing in some pieces in the transfer portal, some pieces that could be high-end players at TCU. And I think Sonny Dykes is a hell of a coach. Also, this game is on the road, so it makes sense why Texas is only 5-point favorites against TCU. But I don't see Fort Worth or TCU just having this killer home field advantage in terms of making Texas uncomfortable, right? Maybe when they go to Iowa State, maybe even when they go to Houston, right? But not TCU, not Fort Worth. And I think by the end of the season, we'll know what type of team TCU is. Either Sonny Dykes was able to maintain the success he had last year with Gary Patterson's players, or they look like a completely different TCU team. Either way, I'm taking Texas minus 5 against TCU on the road in Fort Worth. I think they're more than 5 points better than this TCU team, and I think they show it in that game. So those are my thoughts for all of the lines that Bet Online has posted for the Texas football team this season. Once again, I would take Texas minus 35 against Rice. I would take Texas plus 6.5 against Alabama. I would take Texas, or I would fade Texas minus 8 against Baylor, even though that could be a good line. I'm hammering Texas minus 17 against Kansas. I'm fading Texas minus 6 against Oklahoma, fading Texas minus 9.5 against Kansas State, and I'm hammering Texas minus 5 against TCU. Let's hope things actually go that way in the season, right? Quick word from our sponsors, and we're talking about Caleb Love. Could he end up at the University of Texas, and what would that look like at the 40 acres for this Texas basketball team? Love is one of the most dynamic players in college basketball. That's certainly unquestioned. Somebody who has 3 years of experience at the college basketball level, a five-star player coming out of high school in St. Louis, and was looked at as certainly a future NBA player one day. And his college career has probably been, you know, the most controversial, and definitely been a hell of a roller coaster, right? Because we saw, you know, his freshman year, you can never really just judge a true freshman, even though we've seen that in college basketball so much, we do that. But he wasn't great. But he came back his sophomore year, had a really good season that culminated in a national championship run. And then he came back this year, and, you know, when they had so many expectations as the number one preseason team, North Carolina didn't even make the tournament, right? So we've seen peak, like extreme peaks and valleys in Caleb Love's career thus far. And when you looked at what he was able to do last year, in a year where North Carolina didn't even make the tournament, 17 points per game, 4 rebounds on 38% from the field, 30% from three, really 29.9, and then 77% from the free throw line. So Caleb Love was not great last year. We also heard, you know, rumors. I don't even know if I should mention him on the podcast, right? Because, you know, if I mention him on the podcast, that's me somewhat substantiating him. But there was a lot of rumors, a lot of smoke last year that him and RJ Davis did not get along for reasons that aren't really that serious in the long run, right? And so Caleb Love entered the transfer portal, and North Carolina kind of decided to keep their core, right? I think Leaky Black is coming back, Armando Bacot is coming back, and RJ Davis is coming back. But they said they made a mutual decision for Caleb Love to leave. That's not a great sign, right? In terms of a team that just went to the Natty, comes back, doesn't win the tournament, and three of their core players return, but Caleb Love enters the transfer portal. He tries to go to Michigan, and, you know, Michigan is a really good school in terms of academics. Their academic standards, for whatever reason, did not allow Caleb Love in, and so now he's back in the transfer portal. And I continue to hear Texas, Arizona, and UConn as three of the biggest and most likely landing spots for Caleb Love. And when he first entered the transfer portal, when we still had AJ Johnson on the roster, when he still had Ron Holland on the roster, and I felt like we had a really good chance of, you know, continuing that momentum and building the team, I was out on Caleb Love. The reason I'm out on Caleb Love is because he, when he's on, is a superstar in college basketball. And you can't find 10 players better than Caleb Love at just putting the ball in the hole. And at the end of the day, that's the most important thing in basketball, putting the ball in the hole. The problem is you never know what type of Caleb Love you're going to get, right? Because he is, in basketball, a high-volume, low-efficiency shot chucker, right? And he is the type of player that can either win you games single-handedly with his shot-making, or he can shoot you out of a lot of games with his shot-making as well. And so when you look at what he was able to do in the national championship run when he kind of made a name for himself, he had 23 against Marquette in the second round. He had 30 against UCLA, I think, in the Elite Eight. And then he had 28 against Duke in the Final Four. That UCLA game might have been the Sweet 16. And then he had 28 against Duke in the Final Four against Coach K, in his last game, right? So we saw three games in the NCAA tournament where he was just lights out, amazing, en route to North Carolina, get into the national championship game. But against Kansas in the Natty, where they had a 15-point halftime lead, he goes 5 for 24. And you can make the argument that he was a large part in them losing and shooting them out the game. That season, he shot 36% from three on 6.6 attempts per game. So he was really good from three on a lot of attempts. But we saw that drop all the way to 29-30% last season. So like I said, you don't know what Caleb Love you're going to get. Now, based on the current roster construction, I think this team needs Caleb Love for a variety of reasons. One, you need a very explosive wing, and why not get one of the most explosive, maybe the most explosive in the country, in Caleb Love. Two, I think that's going to help with recruiting, right? Caleb Love is a high-profile player. There's going to be a lot more attention on your team with Caleb Love on it. That's only going to help with recruiting moving forward because Texas basketball will be on the national scene. And three, I think with Caleb Love in the starting lineup, you have one of, if not the most intriguing starting lineup in the country, and you can do so much. And so I think with, you know, Max Amos and Tyrese Hunter around Caleb Love as well, that takes pressure off of him because I think they're better scoring and more dynamic options than what he had around him at North Carolina in RJ Davis and Leaky Black and Armando Bacot. So, you know, Caleb Love definitely has his flaws as a player. Like I said, he can be a high volume, low efficiency shot chucker that could definitely shoot Texas out of games. And there's going to be a lot of games this year if he decides to come to Texas where he shoots 5 for 23 for 18 and Texas fans are frustrated. But you want Caleb Love for those big moments. You want Caleb Love for that 23-point game against Marquette. You want Caleb Love for that 30-point game against UCLA. And you want Caleb Love for that 28-point game against Duke. And I think if he comes to the 40 acres, you're going to see a lot more of that this year from Caleb Love. Like I said, I don't know what Caleb Love you're going to get night in and night out, but I do know you're getting one of the best players in the country, and he significantly increases the ceiling of your basketball team. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Locked On Longhorns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. Hook 'em. Peace.